My name is Tanya DeCarmo, and I work for an organization called ChapDai. Let me push this. Yeah. So I am director of development at an organization called ChapDai. ChapDai means joining hands in Khmer. Khmer is Cambodian language. And ChapDai started in Cambodia in 2005. I worked with Helen Sworn, our director, there in Cambodia for a couple years. Moved back here to the United States last July, and we opened up ChapDai US last July out of Sacramento, California. Prior to living in Cambodia, I lived in Brazil. I have my husband here with me today, Janielson. He's here in the front. He's Brazilian. We met in Brazil. A lot of people are confused about my life. I'm married a Brazilian, and I lived in Cambodia. It's all very confusing. Anyway, and we're moving back to Cambodia next summer. Work ChapDai Cambodia, and we'll be handing over ChapDai US then. I wasn't really sure what the plenaries were going to sort of focus on, so I kind of just did, we won't spend lots of time on this, you know, what is human trafficking? Talk a little bit about that. Basically, I think you guys caught on now, if you didn't know already, human trafficking is the sale, transport, and profit from human beings who are forced to work. Basically, it's selling humans. It's slavery. And people can be trafficked and sold for lots of different things, including sex, which is oftentimes the ones we maybe hear about the most, but lots of different labor. People can be trafficked for any kind of labor, agricultural labor, domestic servitude, lots of different kinds of any labor, or war, like child soldiers. A lot of people aren't aware that there's slavery today. Yes, there's slavery today. If you compare it to the transatlantic slave trade, which we all learned about in school, the transatlantic slave trade was legal. There are about 13.5 million slaves sold during the entire trade. The price was about $1,000 to $1,800 per slave. That's about $50,000 to $100,000 today. And to buy a slave was a serious investment, something you saved up for. By the way, before I forget to say this, I didn't bring handouts, but what I will do is I'll put all my whole slide presentation on the ChapDai website afterwards in the download section. So if you want a copy of this, you can get that. Up to you, whether you want to take notes or whatever. Compare transatlantic slave trade to slavery today. Slavery today is obviously illegal. There's about 27 million slaves at any given time. That's two times more than the whole transatlantic slave trade. The average price of a slave today is $90, and slaves are cheap and disposable. If you read Kevin Bale's Disposable People, he goes into a lot of detail about the difference between how slaves back then were an investment. So you might not have treated your slave the best, but you didn't want to kill them because it costs a lot of money to buy them. But today, you have disposable slaves, so since you didn't pay so much money to get the slave, therefore it's not, quote unquote, that big of a deal if the slave dies, because you can just get a new one. It's easy to find a new one. This is looking at the middle passage. You know, you learned about this in school, how the slaves were taken from Africa over to the Caribbean. They went through the camps, and some of them stayed in South America. Some of them went up to North America. This is slave routes just into the U.S. today. So, again, just into the U.S. And really, I mean, it's kind of like one of those things that I look at it and it looks like a lot of lines, but I bet it's more. You know, I bet that there's more lines than that. So that's just to get them an idea of the way that this has grown tremendously even since the slave trade that we all learned about in school. What causes human trafficking? I haven't heard tons about this yet here at this conference. You talk about supply and demand. If you talk about a marketplace, any marketplace, you know, economics, all that. Supply and demand, that's what creates a market. There's a supply, there's something that people buy, but the reason that supply exists is because there's a demand for it. There's people that want to buy it. Human trafficking and sexual exploitation or prostitution, really, we focus a lot on supply, a lot on the kids, the people that are trafficked, and that's good. We want to make sure that we're addressing that. Don't talk so much about demand. We don't talk so much about why they're being sold, who's out there buying, who's out there buying the products, who's out there buying the sex, who's out there selling the people, who's out there you know, what about our culture that demands cheap labor, our culture that demands cheap sex, our culture that says sex is a commodity? All of those things, that's the demand side of trafficking. Don't hear about it so much. There's more organizations now focusing on that. And in my opinion, the opinion of Child Die and a lot of organizations, really the end of trafficking has to do a lot more with demand than supply. It's great to do rescue. I'm not putting down rescue, but you rescue a bunch of slaves, they're all going to be replaced very, very quickly. And so, yes, everyone that you rescue is definitely worth rescuing, but we want to stop that flow of people into those spots. So when you look at the supply versus demand, I'm not going to read all of this, but you basically have the supply, the vulnerability factors of why people get trafficked. Gender, they're orphan, gender meaning most females are extremely vulnerable, but males too. Poverty, you hear lots about poverty. If you're poor, then you're, you know, vulnerable to be trafficked. However, poverty and gender and those things are not the cause of trafficking. They're vulnerability factors to be trafficked. The cause of trafficking is found more in demand. The pull factor is what pulls people into being trafficked. It's the demand of people saying, we want cheap products, we want cheap sex, we want to be able to buy sex, we want child pornography, all of those things. Those are the pull. So again, this slide will be up. I'll put this on our website tonight. You can pull this up, and plus you can find this on a lot of websites. Salvation Army has one of these sort of graphs. Where does trafficking happen? This conference, I think we're focusing a lot on global. We do have some things talking about the U.S. Personally, I came from Cambodia, where, you know, everyone, we talk a lot about trafficking in Cambodia. We talk a lot about trafficking in Southeast Asia, Asia in general. However, trafficking and commercial sexual exploitation, these are global issues. We've talked about that at this conference already. This is happening everywhere. This is not a problem over in the poor countries, and like, we don't have to deal with that here. It's a problem absolutely everywhere. I'll tell you, we get lots of teams in Cambodia, and I'll sit down with them and I'll say, oh, did you know trafficking happens in the United States? And I get lots of surprised faces. No, I don't think I realized the extent until I moved back here last July and I started working with organizations, and I'm like, wow, you know, this is a really big problem here. And we really need to be facing this head on at a global scale. I think this has been said already. Human trafficking is the second largest source of income for organized crime, and it's the fastest form of international crime, generating more than $7 billion. I think that that's conservative. I've heard some people say, like, in like a decade, it will have reached number one largest source of income. I mean, who knows? That's like a projection. Jumping into Cambodia versus U.S. again, you have the U.S. U.S. and Cambodia are both source, transit, and destination countries. It basically means that people come from these countries, they pass through these countries, and they're sent to these countries to be trafficked. So you have American citizens that are trafficked, Cambodian citizens that are trafficked. Then you have people coming from the outside going in, and you have people being like taken across the country. Both of these countries as well have an internal problem with trafficking, meaning trafficking does not have to happen over a border. Sometimes we get confused thinking that, oh, it's like drug, we talk about drug trafficking a lot, like on the Mexican border or something. Trafficking does not require a border. I can traffic any one of you within this room if I sell you to somebody else in this room and you're trafficked right here. There doesn't need to be a border. So both of these nations have internal trafficking problems. You have U.S. citizens being trafficked within our own borders. Within our own borders. Numbers-wise, in the U.S., 100,000 to 300,000 American children at risk of being trafficked for sex. That comes from Shared Hope International. 12 is the average age of an American child entering porn and or commercial sex. That's not looking at porn. That's being in a porn film, okay? So 12 is the average age of an American child entering porn, being in a porn or pornographic image or film or commercial sex. That's the average age of the American citizen that's being trafficked for sex. 2.8 million children live on the streets in the United States, and a third are lured into prostitution within 48 hours. I've heard that number higher. Basically, most of those numbers are coming from runaway throwaways. They're called girls or boys, but mostly girls run away from home within 48 hours. One out of three will be picked up by a pimp. 48 hours. They know how to pick them up. So that's United States. Cambodia, you have, again, before, numbers are sort of all, they're all estimates. We don't know exactly how many numbers, but 50,000, 100,000 Cambodian women and children sexually exploited. Sex tourism perpetrated by both Asian and Westerners. Honestly, in Cambodia, I see lots of Taiwanese, Chinese, Koreans, Japanese coming through on sex tourist trips and on buses. They come in on buses. They all get off the bus, go in a brothel, come out an hour later, move on to the next thing. So this is Westerners and Asian sex tourists. But actually in Cambodia, the majority of men that visit brothels are actually Cambodian nationals, not Westerners. So we did not bring the problem in. Still doesn't make it okay. But this is a problem everywhere. And I bet our brothels here are the same. I'm sure more American men visit our brothels than foreign men. And 250,000 children in the worst forms of child labor. That just means normally sexual exploitation or hardcore labor situations. And many of them are trafficked or exploited. So how can these things stop? We're going to move into the main focus of this breakout. There's lots of different approaches to ending human trafficking. We've already touched on a couple of them within this conference already. Prevention is a big one. Wasn't talked about so much about 5 to 6 years ago. Let's stop the problem before it happens. Let's stop the trafficked victim from falling over the cliff rather than catching them at the end. Let's educate, let's get families and children educated about trafficking techniques from the trafficker. So prevention, demand focus, I talked about demand before. Let's focus on stopping trafficking by working on the demand side. Let's find out who's buying sex. Let's find out how can we buy products that are not our fair trade. How can we look at our culture through a different lens and say, you know what, I don't believe that sex is a commodity, and make a difference through our societal acceptance of buying sex, looking at porn. All of those things are intimately linked to trafficking. There's really no divide there. So a demand-focused approach, legislation, sort of like the IJM route, looking at how can we advocate with government, how can we change that, maybe working with UN agencies. And what we're going to be talking about today is collaboration. Maybe I'm biased, I work for a coalition, but I firmly believe that in order for trafficking to stop, collaboration is key. We can't all be doing our own stuff and expecting we're going to stop it all on our own. So why collaboration? Trafficking and CSE stands for commercial sexual exploitation, are not simple problems, okay? I think we've talked about that a little bit at the conference. These are not just, it's kind of like poverty or something. How do you stop poverty? It's not just because people are poor, give them money. That's not going to really solve the problem. Trafficking and commercial sexual exploitation have lots of different sort of, they're caused by lots of things. I showed you that supply and demand thing. There's lots of things going into this that makes it possible. So they're not simple problems. All sectors should be involved, meaning that in order to stop trafficking, grassroots groups, government, community-based organizations, professional NGOs. NGOs means non-governmental organization. INGOs, international non-governmental organizations, or like UN, all of these sectors need to be working together to end this. Because, okay, grassroots movements are great, but there's really only so far, and David Batstone said this yesterday, there's really only so far that they can take an investigation before they need to put that into the hands of law enforcement. They're not going to be able to arrest people. That's just fact. But maybe the police can't go out and do all these investigations because they don't have the resources. So everyone needs to be working together on this scale. And it's not easy to do, but I think it's possible. No organization can do it all. Okay. If you're thinking, oh, I love, let's just pick on Not For Sale for a minute. You know, I love Not For Sale. I think that they're going to stop trafficking. I'm sorry, but Not For Sale alone will not stop trafficking. Now, Not For Sale in collaboration with lots of other organizations can definitely help stop trafficking. CHABDI alone cannot stop health trafficking. We don't have aftercare programs. We don't have that kind of stuff. There's no way that we're going to be able to stop trafficking on our own. I listed a bunch of stuff. We're going to be looking at a model in a minute, the CHABDI model for Cambodia. All the different areas that you can, organizations can look at when they try to stop trafficking. Prevention, aftercare, advocacy, research, demand focused work, reintegration, income generation. These are, and I'll say what all those are in a minute. There's so many different areas that you can be focused on trafficking. And I'm sorry, but one organization, if they tried to do all those things on their own, I think that would be very hard. And I don't know, but it seems like a lot of their people would get burnt out pretty fast. And they'd have to have a lot of money. So maybe, and it's probably not good for one organization to do everything. Maybe they should specialize on certain things. Collaboration pushes organizations to be accountable to one another. Okay. You have lots of people with great intentions. But that doesn't mean that everyone knows what they're doing. And it doesn't mean that everyone knows how to do everything. Okay. I don't know how to run an aftercare home. Okay. So if I'm doing advocacy for aftercare, it's important for me to be in collaboration with an aftercare program so that I can better understand the issues there. Okay. So accountability. So then the aftercare home, they can do what they do best and help keep me informed, but then I can help them with legal things because maybe they don't have the legal expertise. And I can say, you know, I noticed that you're putting photos of your victims on the website and, you know, I don't think that that's ethical. And so maybe I'm keeping them accountable for their fundraising tactics or something like that. That's just an example of ways that organizations can keep each other accountable. And according to best practice is sort of like a term that you talk about, meaning through research, there's proof that there are certain ways of addressing not just trafficking, but orphanage care or orphan care. There's ways that have been proven to be the best way, and maybe that would be considered best practice. So if we know that a certain model of care didn't work very well in one program, it's likely that it might not work very well again. So we need to look at who's done what and whether it's worked well or not. In coalition, it's likely projects, or less likely, projects will reinvent the wheel. Okay, meaning if you're in a coalition and you're really wanting to open a home, but you'll know what other homes exist. Now, if you're not in coalition, you think, oh, trafficking victims, they need help, so I'm going to open a home. And maybe you're opening a home like the same as down the street and you just don't even know. And combating trafficking and commercial sexual exploitation requires major organization, meaning referral networks. Okay, CHABDI is not the only collaboration organization, and we don't claim to be. There's current collaboration efforts happening everywhere. Private NGOs, non-governmental organizations, such as FAST's Faith Alliance Against Slavery and Trafficking. Excuse me, they're based out of D.C., or it might be Virginia. CATW, Coalition Against Trafficking of Women, their international coalition. Viva Network, ASHA, their Christian network, children working at people organizations working with children at risk. CHABDI, ECPAT, they started in Thailand, now they're international. They're the ones that do those huge international conferences like every couple of years. They just had one in Brazil. Freedom Network, that's here within the United States. So there's different sort of coalitions going on. I'm going to talk about maybe pushing those forward in different ways, but there's UN coalitions, okay? The United Nations is one body, but then they have all their UN agencies. There's coalitions within the UN, such as UNIAP, which is United Nations Interagency Project, which doesn't really tell you anything, but that's the greater Mekong subregion. That means China, Laos, Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia. I might have missed one. There's a river called the Mekong River. It goes down there, and there's a UN agency that pulls together the other UN agencies in those countries and works with government to work together against trafficking. It's huge. It's a coalition in Southeast Asia. UN GIFT, you might have heard of, that comes out of United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime. That's a trafficking-focused UN agency. But that's also a coalition. So there are coalitions, Rescue and Restore coalitions, I'm sure. Many of you have heard of these. They're across the United States. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services started these, or the I guess they're funding these coalitions across the United States. They're citywide coalitions of organizations working against trafficking. San Jose has a task force. Sacramento has one. I think Bay Area has one. So the task forces are different. The human trafficking task forces, those are linked to the Department of Justice, and those are like police, FBI working together. I didn't set this up. What we're going to do next then is watch a video. Real short, it's not long, that just introduces Chabdai. I'm talking a little bit fast, but I want to make sure we get through and then have some time for questions, which is why I'm talking fast. We'll see if this works.
Children each year. Child sex tourism is a $150 million industry. Cambodia is one of the top destinations. 30 to 35% of Cambodia's thousands of sex workers are sexually exploited minors. Reported rape cases in Cambodia are against minors as young as 4 years old. Christian organizations raising the standards of initiatives addressing trafficking and sexual exploitation in Cambodia through prevention, intervention, and aftercare. Our three main focus areas are learning community. This includes our biannual meetings, focus forums, and resource library. Advocacy and research, such as our Freedom Day campaign, our first research paper called At What Price Honor, and the establishment of a national child helpline. Prevention and intervention, including our Good Boy and Daughter training and victim support cards, church and community prevention program, and urban prevention program. Pray for those who have been exploited or abused. Pray for Chabdai and member organizations as they work against abuse and exploitation. Give of your time. Raise awareness or volunteer at a member organization. Give financially toward our work in Cambodia.
Okay. So, like I said, Chabdai means joining hands in Khmer. I kind of went through this. We're a network of Christian organizations working against exploitation and human trafficking in Cambodia. We're made up of organizations that focus on various areas of work. And we work according to the idea that in order to create a strong front against trafficking, collaboration, shared learning, and networking are the keys to success. We have about 40 members. Now, our members are Christian organizations, okay? To be a member, you're a Christian organization. They focus on areas like prevention, like community education, legal intervention, like IJM is one of our members, doing like the raids or doing legal help for victims. Outreach, like red light district outreach, aftercare, like homes. We're going to look at that in a minute, what that looks like. Vocational training, doing like job skills for girls that have been taken out, or maybe even through prevention, so that victims can have different jobs, so that they're less likely to go back into sex or into exploitation. And reintegration, so organizations that focus specifically on getting the victim into the community after they've gone through rehabilitation, and income generation, so helping set up small business for victims and survivors. We also work with partners, meaning organizations that are not members, maybe they're government or they're UN or they're not Christian organizations or they're other coalitions. We work with more than 50 of those. And a big focus for us has been to be a bridge builder between the Christians and non-Christians. Christians don't always like to work with government and UN, and same vice versa, same here. And so we a lot of times try to bridge build, not meaning we go in and say, why don't you work with Christians, but more like going and representing the Christians at a UN event or something like that. So international partners, we also have cross-border, well, all over the world, but then also cross-border partnerships with organizations in Vietnam, Thailand, Laos, and Malaysia. Our learning community, what is it? What do you do? We have a resource library. That's a big deal in a country like Cambodia that doesn't have like great libraries or access to information, because a lot of people don't have the internet or they don't know how to use the internet. So we have more than 2,000 resources in English, Khmer, Vietnamese, all about trafficking, and in 60 categories. So it kind of shows you how huge the issue is. Training and capacity building for members. Do lots of training on everything from fundraising to counseling to certain kinds of therapy, all over different kinds. Member meetings and forums. A big thing of what we do is we have forums so like all the shelters can come together and talk about the issues that pertain to them. All the prevention organizations can come together and talk about issues that pertain to them. That was an interesting one to start. A lot of the shelters when Chabdai started were not talking to each other. Okay, they were not liking each other. And so we came in and tried to, you know, talk about the why, you know, and it's been interesting, and that's been going for about 2 years, and it's still a difficult forum. And bridge building I talked about. Okay, right now, one of the results of coalition building, okay? This is just the Chabdai model, Cambodia model. I'm going to go through what happens to a victim today when they're rescued or through a referral. This was not the case 4 years ago. 4 years ago, this is very different. So you have your community of sexual exploitation, whether that's a brothel or street prostitution or something, and it's very separate from a home or a safe community. And we're going to show how we're attempt. This is not perfect yet, but it's our attempt to move victims from that community of sexual exploitation down into safe community, because that is the goal of rescue, right? So first you have prevention programs. That's a little bit separate, but the prevention programs are trying to stop people from entering that community of sexual exploitation, or a demand-focused approach. Okay, so there's a rescue or an escape or a referral. So somebody is moved out of the community of sexual exploitation. Normally, they're taken to the police station or authorities first. A lot of times, they spend the night in jail. Just the way that it works. This is how it happens here in the United States. You say, well, it's a victim. It's not fair. It's just the way that it works. They'll be taken to the police station and be interviewed, try and figure out if they're a victim or an accomplice or who they are. Unfortunately, if they're over 18, normally they'll be released and normally they'll go back to the brothel. It doesn't mean that they want to go back, but maybe they have nowhere else to go or they're convinced that that's all they can do with their life. We'll talk about over 18 in a minute. If they're under 18 or sometimes up to 21, they'll be moved to an assessment center. The assessment center is one of our member organizations that opened around the same time as our coalition. It's hard to have an assessment center if you don't have coalition. I'll say in a minute why. But the assessment center is a center, it's a home where the victims are sent first so that the counselors and social workers can figure out what happened to them. Are they a rape case? Are they a trafficking case? You know, what kind of case is it? Was it done by a foreigner? Was it done by a Cambodian? Like, there's all sorts of different things you need to find out about that victim before you can help them. Normally, they'll spend about 3 months in the assessment center. I also have this little dotted arrow from the community of exploitation, sometimes going directly to the assessment center if there's a brothel raid that didn't include the authorities. I put it as a dotted line because we're trying to stay away from that route. You don't really want to do a raid and then just don't include the police, because we want to work with the police to make sure things go through right. Also, because if you ever take that person to court and you didn't collect the right evidence, you're not going to be able to get a good court case. So it's really important that you include the police. But sometimes it happens. Sometimes they go straight to the assessment center. Sometimes from the assessment center, they can go right home. If it's a rape case, if it's safe for them to go home, if they were able to move through counseling in 3 months, then sometimes they can go right home. More often than not, it's not the case. And after 3 months, they go to either a high security or low security shelter. High security means they have either a high flight risk. Maybe they're wanting to run away. Or maybe they're in the middle of a case that's very high profile, and so it's not safe for them to be just like out on the street, meaning like to be able to come and go from the shelter as they want. Low security normally meaning maybe it wasn't a high profile case. Maybe it's okay for that particular victim to be in a home where they can like go ride their bike outside or like outside of the compound or something. It really depends on the victim. And there's not only two. We have about 8 in Cambodia that are Christian, and they all vary, and this is part of the coalition thing. They all focus on a certain age group, on a certain gender. They're able to help specific victims and what they've gone through rather than sticking a bunch of rape cases and trafficking cases and prostitution cases of girls that are 4 to 17 all in the same building. And that's all you can do. That's all you can do. But it's not the ideal situation. Or they might be sent, if it's an older girl, maybe she's 16 or 17. She's kind of just wants to go out into the community. It's not necessarily for her to be in a shelter long term. She can go to the transitional living center. Or maybe if she's really young, she can go into foster care, community care, if she can't go home. I'm saying she because this program is for girls. I'm talking about boys in a minute. And so sometimes they can be sent straight there. Sometimes not. Sometimes they'll go to the high security and then they're moved down to transitional living. And then from there they go home, safe community. Meanwhile, while they're in these programs, which is like safe home, they can go through with our other members who offer vocational training, income generation, life skills. Maybe they're working with lawyers for their court case or counseling. And that's at the same time as being in these. See, this is where collaboration is important, and this is where referrals are important. Because if you're not networked, you might know of one vocational training program, but maybe it's only sewing and the girl in your program wants to learn to cook or something. So it's really important that you have these opportunities available to victims. What happened there? Oh, and sometimes when they go home, there's a two-way arrow here. They might still be going into the vocational training skill stuff. Meanwhile, on this other side, I was talking about over 18, you have other members who are doing work with all ages. Normally, they're doing like outreach, like they have medical centers in red light districts. Maybe they're working with brothel owners. We have one member doing that. Street kids outreach, just working with kids on the street, giving them food, making friends with them. we have, it's not up there, we have one member who's doing drug rehab. A lot of the boys that live on the street have been exploited and are addicted to drugs, so they've opened a detox center. My husband's going to be working for them when we go back. They do vocational training in the outreach and income generation. So as you can see, oh, there's one more. Sometimes from the outreach, you'll have a referral go into the homes, but normally that's not really the objective, because some girls don't want to leave the brothel. If you take them out and you stick them in a home, they're just going to want to leave. And so some of our members, they work with the girls while they're working in the brothel. Now, some of these girls are under 18, and people are like, well, that's controversial. It is controversial, but we have members that believe that if a girl makes a choice to leave, she's more likely to stay out, which I agree with. It's a 4-year-old, I'm not sure that I would agree with it. But if it's a 16-year-old and you're working with a long time in exploitation, it might be more sustainable to work with that girl, work with her and saying, well, you can have do this if you were to leave, and work with her on choosing to leave. A lot of these girls, they're brainwashed. They don't like what they're doing, but they don't see what else they can do. So that's sort of a victim-centered approach, and I'm running out of time already. Another result of the coalition in Cambodia has been there's more of a collective effort. There's been improved communication between FBO, means faith-based organization, and between, like, within them and between FBOs and UN government. There's been an advancement in best practice models. I talked about best practice, meaning there's been a raising of quality care within Christian organizations. As the more they learn, the more they see best practice, they raise their capacity to give a quality care that's been proven through research to be positive. There's greater accountability to outside organizations. A lot of Christian organizations don't work according to the standards that non-Christian organizations do. That's fact. I hate to say that, but that's true. A lot of Christian organizations, at least in Cambodia, that have homes, not all of them, but some of them don't find it necessary, for example, to put in a child protection policy, meaning a policy within their staff of what's appropriate and inappropriate touch. They don't see that that's necessary because they're like, well, all of our staff are Christian. That's not going to happen here. Well, unfortunately, when we work with those organizations and they end up putting a policy in place, normally abuse comes to light because a staff member didn't think, especially in Cambodia where you have different people raised different ways and they were never taught about appropriate or inappropriate touch. And so you have abuse happening between kids, abuse happening between staff and kids. And so the greater accountability is more like, okay, you are focused on aftercare and maybe you don't really know a lot about child protection, but you have the other organizations and the coalition working with you to say, hey, maybe it's good for you to put this policy in, it'll help you be a better organization. So that's what I mean by accountability. Less duplication, more specialization, meaning less organizations coming in, just starting something, not knowing what's going on, and more organizations coming in, working with CHABDI and saying, okay, what's not being done? What can our organization do to open an aftercare shelter that's new or that's needed? Maybe not new, but needed. More training, capacity, national staff has gone up. Collaborative research, we have lots of research now that's been lots of organizations giving input to one research program. Normally, that doesn't happen very well. If one organization wants to do research on aftercare, more than likely, if they're not in a coalition, they're just going to write about their own stuff. If you have collaborative research, you have lots of different people giving the research, and that makes the research better. Collaborative projects like National Child Helpline. CHABDI has helped bring in organizations to put together, now it's its own organization, a phone number where kids can call when they need help because there's no 911 in Cambodia. Gap areas have been better addressed. If everyone's doing their own thing and you don't really know who's doing what, you don't know what's not being addressed. Now, in Cambodia, that's come out in lots of different areas. So we've had former gap areas come to light through knowing what everyone's doing and having the research going on. And then now that we see the gap areas, we can say, okay, what needs to be done now? So examples of that, our ethnic Vietnamese program. We have a small population of ethnic Vietnamese in Cambodia who are very, very vulnerable to being trafficked. In 2007, I believe, the assessment center had, ethnic Vietnamese only makes up about 5% of the Cambodian population, but they're stateless. They don't have papers. Cambodian government says, you're not ours. Vietnamese government says, you're not ours. You live in Cambodia. So they don't have papers, which makes them totally vulnerable to be trafficked because no one can follow them. They make about 5% of the population. About 70% of the girls going through the assessment center were Vietnamese. So you're like, okay, the Vietnamese are really vulnerable. So through working the assessment center, we had a research on ethnic Vietnamese. Through that knowledge, we now have three members that only work with Vietnamese. And so that really came through the coalition, prevention focus. When we started in 2005, we started a prevention program that was like the only one. Okay, only focused on, we weren't only focused. We had a department only focused on prevention. And now I think there's probably six. So that has come out of the coalition. Demand-focused organization, that's new. We have some coming out now. Sexual abuse of boys. Boys is a huge issue that a lot of people don't talk about. Boys in Cambodia are abused and they're exploited. It's not only girls. And the problem is that a lot of people don't talk about it, and boys think that it must just be something wrong with them, so they don't tell anybody. A research in India last year showed, I think it was done in three cities, 49% of girls, of all the sexually abused kids in the family, 49% were girls and 51% were boys. So yeah, it's about equal, but I bet a lot of the girls get a lot of help, but I'm not sure how many help boys get. And so let's really come out of the coalition to saying, nobody's really working with boys. What can we do to work with boys? We had our first research come out. A member had a first research come out last year about boys, and it was daunting how many boys are being sexually abused and exploited. A lot of them live on the street. Not a lot of them. Some of them live on the street. And you have foreign men going up to them, becoming friends with them, grooming them, giving them money, and eventually having sex with them. And they convince the boy that they're selling that service. And over time, the boy just thinks, well, I can get more money doing that way than collecting cans. And he might not want to, but it's just, he's accepted now that it's happened to him. And there's really not a lot of help for them. So that's another gap area. Child protection issues. We talked about policies. The gap there has totally come through that a lot of organizations, especially Christians, don't have policies in place to protect the kids that they're working with. Alternative care issues, looking at, a lot of the kids or babies of women that have been rescued are going straight into the orphanage system. Can we maybe look at adoption system or foster care system instead of orphanages? And caring for caregivers, we have a whole member now that's doing that. Just looking at how can you take care of your staff that work with victims all the time. I'm totally running out of time, but man, I really wanted to focus on this. Child IUS, we opened last July. We're new. When I came over, we were only going to focus mainly on Cambodia. Even though I knew trafficking was happening here, we thought, we'll fundraise or something. I came over here and I started working with organizations, and I'm like, oh my gosh, trafficking is like happening a lot in the United States. And I don't know how to say this. I feel we're behind. I really feel like we're behind in addressing trafficking if you compare it to like Asia. Now, Asia might have more numbers, but I feel like we're behind in addressing it. Less people know. We're not really working together, generally speaking. And so the more I talk to people, the more I'm like, what are we gonna do about this? I didn't feel right about only focusing on Cambodia and ignoring the United States. So our objectives now as an organization are awareness raising, advocacy, and education. I speak at conferences, I do training for aftercare, but also networking and coalition building within the United States. We're currently launching a mapping project. It's not like the Not For Sale mapping project. They're mapping slavery. We're mapping organizations working against trafficking. There's no list in the United States of all organizations working against trafficking. There's no list. The government doesn't have one. Organizations have some, but not all. There's really no list, and there's really no accountability to who opens a home. Now, I'm not saying that people open homes are bad people, but you don't really know. You know, you have all these people out there that are opening homes, and who knows who they are, you know? And so where does that accountability come from? I don't want to totally put down our system. We have a bureaucracy that normally will set it up well, but I'm just saying, generally speaking, there's little accountability outside of your government reporting. So generally speaking, I'm not going to put down organizations in the United States. Organizations here often reinvent the wheel. I travel around and I meet these people and they're opening a home and they say, we're opening the first Christian home in America. Maybe they really believe that, and I'm not putting them down, but I've met like 8 that say that, okay? And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's great. Maybe you're the first in your state, you know, or the first in your city, and that's great, you know. Do you know so-and-so that works in Texas because they're opening a home? Or do you know so-and-so in Ohio? And so it's not that they are lying. I don't think they're lying. They just don't know, you know. And so they're opening homes and they think they're the only ones. Now, if you think you're the only one, you're just going to do what you want to do and not really sort of, okay, what's the best route? Who's done what? How can we work with them? So there's a great divide between government, UN, faith-based, and grassroots, okay? I go to these conferences. I go to a secular conference, and like I'm like one of 3 or Christian organizations there, and they all think that they're all the ones doing working against trafficking, but I know that there's like 50 more back here that weren't invited to this conference, okay? It's not that I'm special and I was invited. It's more just because there's like these cliques or something of organizations that work together and they say they're the only ones. I don't think they're lying or that they're making it up. I just think that it's easy to assume, or I don't really know. It's just this assumption. Coalitions, we have them, and I really like the Rescue and Restore coalitions and the task forces. I'm not going to put those down at all. I think they're great. They're regional, so they're not national, and it's great to bring together the regionals, and I know that the task forces do trainings together and stuff, but that's really like police and, you know, city people. Not always. There's different task forces, but it's really not one coalition, and they're often loose. Like, you can sign up for some coalitions online. You just, like, sign up. Oh, I'm Chabdai, and my name is this, and then you're a part of it, and I'm like, well, now what? And like, what does it mean that I'm part of this coalition, and maybe I never hear from them again? So, coalitions are often clicky. I talked about that. A little accountability, little focus on training within the coalition, I'm saying. I'm not saying that as a coalition we would tell people what to do at all. Like, all of our members within our coalition are autonomous. We don't run them. But there's something good called accountability, and not just from us, but from each other within the coalition. And again, I don't even know what our coalition would look like here. Right now, we're just focusing on the mapping project. The objectives of the mapping project are to map and record initiatives and services available to victims of trafficking in the United States. Who's doing what? Where are they? What are they doing? Okay, it sounds easy. It's not easy. Okay, there's lots of organizations. We want to measure the gap areas. Okay, so who's doing what? Where are they? And what's not being done? Okay. What's everyone focusing on? Great. But what's not being done? And then broadly disseminate the findings. Not probably on like a website where everyone can look at it. We're looking at password using. We don't know yet. It's still in the works. But having something where if you're opening up a home or you work with the FBI or whatever, you have access to who's doing what across the nation, so you can email them or call them or talk to them and figure out how you can work together. The expected outcomes would be a directory, a database of research. Part of it would be doing a lit review of all the trafficking research against US trafficking. There's a lot out there, but gathering them? Where's trafficking happening that we know of? Where are the gap areas in research? Has there been research done in, like, I don't know, Wyoming? I'm probably, but I'm just saying, like, looking at what states still need to be researched. And then we're not just us, we're working at putting together a stakeholder group of organizations to come together, look at what was found, and then come up with recommendations for what needs to happen next. It's not just us, this is a collaborative project. The current stage is we're in stakeholder recruitment. We probably have about 6 organizations that are on board with us to be a part of that sort of committee that looks at everything. I will say, since we're here in Palo Alto, where we are, Mountain View, the San Jose Task Force is on board with us to work with us on this, so that's been very positive. And we're in database development trying to figure out what will be mapped, what are we going to ask everybody? Not just their name and phone number, but what, like, their vision statement, like, what are we going to be mapping? And then obviously fundraising. This is a big one right now, the economy and everything. It's been really challenging, but I'd say we probably still need about 25,000 to put that together. Most of that is, it's not most of it. The project is about 60,000. I think we probably need about 25,000. That's holding us up right now. All that to say, it's 12 o'clock. How to engage generally and with us. This conference is about engaging everyone that comes. This conference is about how to get involved. And so how to engage with us as an organization, or generally, okay? Pray. You don't have to pray for us. You can pray for any organization. I don't care who you pray for. Just pray against trafficking and exploitation, or for organizations, or maybe you want to pray for more collaboration within organizations. I was going to pass this around. I didn't set it up right. There on our table, there's a sign up sheet for our newsletter, or you can go on our website, or you can follow our Twitter or like our Facebook. Just if you could write your name and email. Sorry, I didn't set that up. Or you can wait and do it online. It's up to you. But be praying for us. Be praying for collaboration. I'm telling you, there's a lot of spiritual warfare when it comes to collaboration. We do so much, like, what's the word? Diplomacy, like middleman stuff in Cambodia. Like, it's a job in itself. Like, within organizations that are mad at each other because of this, that. And I'm not putting it down. They're real problems. But it's like lots of spiritual warfare. But there's been positives too. So prayer's working. Learn and be informed. You know what? I know that you might think, oh, really? Like, learn and be informed. There's so much out there to learn about trafficking right now. And educate yourself with quality resources, okay? If you read one newspaper article, you're not an expert. Like, you know, and I know that's, I'm saying it like, duh, but like, some people, you know, they're like, oh, I'm an expert because I wrote a research on trafficking for my class. You know, that's great. And I'm really glad that you educated yourself, but you're not an expert. I don't consider myself an expert. I'm always learning. There's always more to be learned. There's lots of information out there. I would recommend looking at, like, government documents or UN documents or documents that were written by a collaborative group, just because, or journal articles, because those are the ones that have sort of been proofed out. I've read some articles about trafficking that make me really upset because they're totally off, or they say things that I'm like, that's not true. So just look for quality, you know, you might have to ask around or read a lot of them and then find the common denominator. I mean, whatever. Spread the word, that's raising awareness. Don't reinvent the wheel. Okay, don't. I get lots of emails from people like, oh, I just graduated college and I heard about trafficking, so I'm going to start an organization. I'm not saying that we need organizations, but, you know, if you're just out of college and you just heard about trafficking, maybe get a job with a trafficking organization. Like, you don't need to start your own. Like, there's lots of them. There's lots of them. You don't need to start your own unless you have a very, very innovative idea and not a lot of people are doing it. But then check around and make sure. Encourage organizations and churches to network. If your church is involved or wants to know more about trafficking, tell them, you know, put them in contact with the task force. Put them and get a speaker in. Don't just, you know, say, oh, we're the only church in the area that's interested, so we're going to do our own thing. Like, network, you know, get out there and find out what people are doing. Mobilize organizations to participate in the mapping process. If you know of an organization and you think we haven't heard of them and you think they should be mapped, email me. You could donate, raise funds, fundraise for us. It's been a difficult financial year for a lot of people. For us, we're new, so we don't have lots of money. You know, we trust that the Lord will provide, but if that's a way that you would like to get involved, then we would definitely encourage you to do so, or volunteer. Right now, our policy about volunteering in Cambodia, this is new, is that you need to have volunteered for a couple months in your own town against trafficking or exploitation. Reason being, you know, we want to encourage people to realize trafficking is happening here. It's not over in Cambodia only. So if you're interested in volunteering in Cambodia and you email me and you haven't really been involved in your own town, I'm going to tell you, oh, you know, have you looked into organizations in your town that are working against trafficking? Maybe you should volunteer with them a couple hours a week or whatever before you come out to Cambodia.